inside your local coffee shop, sporting a mane bun and facial hair. Somehow he believes, although he has no job, that by his 30s he will be a millionaire. M-I-L-L-E-N-N-I-A.
Well, welcome to the August version of the Equipping webinar. My name's Nathan, and I'm the Director of Equipping Apologetics here at Watermark and one of the hosts of this webinar. And I'm joined also by...
Snika Spalding on here as well, and I'm the Director of Women's Equipping and Curriculum here at Watermark Community Church.
Yeah, and then our questions moderator is...
Yes, Sylvia Bayman here, the Stewardship and Equipping Coordinator. And yeah, I get to be interacting with you guys on that questions feature.
And then we're joined today, our guest panelist is the Director of College Ministry here at Watermark Community Church and is a longtime friend of mine, well-respected definitely by our community here, and has been doing a great job with our college students and college ministry, is a huge Clemson fan. Yes. So his football season is nearing. I'm sure you're gearing up for.
Very excited.
Yeah, very excited. But we're joined by Adam Tarno. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, man. I'm really excited to be here. Yeah, excited to be here.
So today we're going to talk about the millennial generation, and you read the news, you look at social media, you look at, you know, we were talking just prior to this, you look at guys trying to climb Trump Tower, you know, and you see some things about this generation that can sometimes cause you to either scratch your head or make you laugh. And so as we think about interacting with a generation that's coming behind Gen Xers and baby boomers and these other generations, how do we best understand these people? And these people, I don't want to sound like bad. You know, I don't understand these people.
Them.
Just for the record, them, Sylvia and I are these people.
Yeah, we have millennials in the room with us. Yeah.
Proud millennials.
But how do you best understand a group that may be different from you and to do so effectively? So, Nika, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah. So, you know, when you talk about generations, it's something that really became a hobby of study when I was in school. And then as I got into the ministry, realized over or close to half of the women that I'm ministering to here at Watermark are millennials. And Adam, much the same to you. So before we even jump into the marquees of it, let's go ahead and define what is a millennial.
So my definition of millennial is really just anybody who's younger than me that I perceive as selfish. So,
and that's a good functioning definition. Yeah,
can be 7-year-olds.
Sure.
Could be 27-year-olds. Just anybody younger than me. No, it really there's some debate on where the years are, but I think for the purpose of our discussion today, we'll say anybody born between 1980 and 2000. I know, Nika, you got a lot of other stats.
Yeah, yeah. And that's so to give you an idea, there's 16 to 36-year-olds, which, like we said, Sylvie and I fall into that. And so this generation is, there's been a lot of ink spilled on them. And so there's data about them that we know. And so one of the things about this generation, they're incredibly optimistic. 41% say that they're satisfied with the way things are going in this country, which is fascinating because this is the same generation who saw 9/11. They saw Hurricane Katrina. They've seen terrorist attacks. They've seen Columbine. They've seen a lot of heartache in our country, and yet are overwhelmingly as a group optimistic. They are also a very tolerant group in terms of minorities or different lifestyles or what would be at one time considered off the mainstream. They're incredibly tolerant of that. Part of that is because they are more diverse than any other generation we've had in America. Those above the age of 30, it's typically 70% are non-Hispanic white, whereas in the millennial generation, it's 60%. And so you can just 10% in one generation is a big jump. Not only that, 11% of millennials are born to an immigrant parent. And so when you think of diversity and values that are intrinsically great in that, that comes with this generation. This is the me generation is probably what you've heard people talk about in terms of self-expression. 75% have a social networking site and the other 25% are just too cool apparently to have it. But, they post videos of themselves online. 38% have 1 to 6 tattoos. And so you think about how you present yourself to the world. What are you showing the world? This self-expression thing is very true of millennials across the board. And they're never far from their phone. They do not like to talk on them, but texting, tweeting, all of these things, and over 80% sleep with their phone by their head. And so you talk about a connected generation. This is this generation. And so, and then one of the last things I would just say is they're incredibly intelligent. They are scoring higher on IQ tests. Sylvie and I can attest to that. We are much smarter than everyone else in this room. But no, they're an incredibly educated group. Yeah, perhaps the most educated group we've seen in America, where education has has been a priority from legislation down, and millennials have been able to take advantage of that. And so you see, although debt with colleges rising as well with this correlation, but you're also seeing education going as well. And so that's a broad stroke definition of what a millennial is. And so you're probably thinking to yourself, oh, I know them. Aren't those the people that we don't like? Which tends to honestly be some of the conversation around this generation. A lot of the ink that's been spilled has been the negativity. And so Adam, why don't you just expand on that? Why do you think it is that this generation has gotten such a bad rap?
I think, like, real practically, it's because the people writing the articles are Gen Xers and baby boomers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there's really nothing new there, that every generation has looked at the generation behind them and has felt like they were just saw all the flaws. Mm. And so a lot of that we just need to know is that the people writing the articles are probably not millennials. So, but we do see some of these generalizations play out. And if I was going to pick three that I think are probably the most common, and we can talk about some examples of all this, I would say that the selfishness that's there, which we know is inherent in every generation, but that me self-centeredness, and what it's doing is what we're seeing is that it's leading to increased levels of narcissism, which is a clinically diagnosable term of like extreme selfishness, extreme focus on self. So it's not just general selfishness. It seems to be going to an extreme level of selfishness within this generation. I mean, they invented the selfie.
Yeah.
So yeah. We all have a different, or we have that camera on the front of our phone because of this generation. So that's great.
You know,
so,
Adam, to your point, I read an article recently. It says the narcissistic personality disorder is now being seen at a rate 3 times higher in those in their 20s than any generation before them. So, yeah. I mean, you know, it's one thing we're even talking about anecdotes, but going, there's even data that's beginning to come out to support,
yes,
these things that we're seeing on,
yeah,
these trends you're talking
People
about.
People are looking at it and just going, okay, this is a little bit different. So the selfishness will lead to, I think a lot of people would say just a general flakiness, non-committal. I mean, they invented the hashtag FOMO, the FMO or FOMO, the fear of missing out. And it really, it's not just a silly hashtag for college students to just go on a random road trip on a Thursday night, you know, like, let's not miss out. Let's go to Lubbock or whatever. You know, it's not just that. It really is a way of life, which is I'm going to be really flaky. I'm going to be non-committal. I'm going to wait till the very last moment to make sure nothing better is going to come along before I commit to it. You know, Nate mentioned part of the news story that we even saw this week about the kid, what was his name? Stephen Regatta, who climbed Trump Tower, 19 years old. And if you look at why he did it, it's because he wanted a personal audience with Trump. So he had something so important to say. And he wasn't getting the audience that he wanted,
yeah,
that he decided, here's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
This is so important. I'm going to just do the most logical thing. I'm going to climb Trump's tower with large suction cups and shut down traffic in Midtown New York. And
take a selfie while doing it.
Yeah,
I don't
probably,
know if he did.
I don't
but
know.
Yeah.
There's a YouTube.
Yeah.
He had a YouTube, probably a GoPro on.
Yeah.
You know, Adam, to that point, it's funny you say that, like, being in this generation, maybe Sylvie might feel the same way I do. Like, I'll get an invite to somebody's wedding 6 months out. And obviously they're trying to plan, they're trying to get a head count,
yeah,
and everything inside of me is going, ooh, I don't know if I want to commit to that. Cause what if something better,
yes,
and, you know, so I even feel that internal struggle as you're talking about, of just this fear of maybe there's something better. Can I hold on to all my cards until the very end?
Yeah.
And
I
have
just
to fight
and your friend,
that.
Your friend's wedding you didn't attend is listening right now.
Actually plan on skipping a few this week. No, kidding.
Yeah. I mean, I just got back from a camp with some Longhorns from at University of Texas. And it happens every year, you know, what are signups? And then the number that signed up and the number that show up, it's never more.
Yeah.
It's always less.
Yeah.
And you just know that that's because there's some people, something better came up. And so that fear of missing out, and they think it's okay. I think they're like, well, it was better.
Mm.
You know, it was just better. And so that's one generalization. It's just the selfishness, this narcissism. It's can lead into some of the flakiness and non-committalness that's really there. I think that's kind of marked this generation, or that, at least that's one of their public reputations. Lazy is one that's used, but again, every generation has accused the one behind it of being lazy. And I think really where this one comes from are some of the stats around how many of them live at home.
Yeah.
And here's an interesting stat, is that more people in this generation that are 18 and above live with their parents than live with a spouse. And so there's some of us that are Xers or boomers or the other generations that are looking at that just going, get a job and move out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you so lazy? And it may not be that they don't have a job. It may be just some really tough economic circumstances. I mean, they lived through the Great Recession. And so it may just be some of that that's there. But I think they have this selfishness and this generalization of being lazy. And then I think another one is just the idealistic view that they have, which, as you were talking about, and we'll talk about as a positive here in a little bit, but just the optimism that they have. And where I think that idealism comes out a lot, especially those in the workplace that are working with millennials, it's this, you know, I think the average one would say, and some surveys would say, they expect to be promoted every 2 years, regardless of performance.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so there is just this idealistic, like, hey, I turned that report in on time and I did a good job. Why am I not CEO right now?
Yeah.
And so why am I not getting all of the promotions and all that kind of stuff? And so they're used to getting trophies
for
everything, which is still going on. And I think largely what's really interesting, though, is to even go back, like they really are the products of the self-esteem movement that started in the late 70s. So all the data's in. We've got longitudinal information on what would the self-esteem movement produce. And this is what it's produced.
For you parents sitting out there, one of the psychologists who are seeing that saying that we believe that self-esteem would be the thing that led to success. And they quickly realized that self-esteem was corollary. It wasn't the cause and effect that led to it. It's just that as you were successful, then that leads to self-esteem. And one of the researchers said, you know what, just tell your kids you love them. It's a far better message and they're special.
Yeah.
You know, and Adam, to your point about these idealistic millennials, part of that optimism, part of all that leads to then unmet expectations. And so it's something like over 60% of millennials believe they will be within the top 20% of performance in their job place. Well, obviously 60% can't meet the 20%. Yeah. Somebody's going to be left out. And so that's another trend that I've seen in this generation of, you know, if I expect to be promoted every 2 years and I expect to be the top performer and maybe I was a top performer or through the self-esteem movement, somebody always told me I was the top performer when in fact I was actually average at that.
Yeah.
You're seeing that they're calling it the quarter life crisis where 25-year-olds, 26-year-olds are suddenly going, I'm 25, I'm 26, I have nothing to show for my life and I'm not even sure how to take the next step in adulthood. And, you know, depression's on the rise within this group and you see just a lot of these unmet expectations leading to an absolute crisis in their life. And so, that's part of, I think, what this generation, despite there's the optimism and a little bit of the despair and makes it a hard thing to even define this group entirely with these broad strokes.
Yeah. And I mean, so some other observations I know, and you and I both see in working with this generation, I think some other observations of what define them, and maybe these aren't getting in the articles, but these are just some anecdotal evidence just from working with college students. They really tend to have an unorthodox view of truth. And so where you and I grew up learning, there's an absolute truth. The teachers and the authorities in the culture, they're the ones who hold the truth. You learn truth from them. It's all really different now. Mm-hmm. And to even say it's relativistic or that everybody's right, it is that, but it's that on a whole nother level, really.
I have to remind one of the things we're seeing now in the church, which is really interesting, I'm sure this is not unique to Watermark, is you have moderns and sort of these Gen Xers and baby boomers leading a lot of millennials in women's Bible study. So we have this Titus 2 model, which is great, older leading the younger. But these generations are so far expanded in terms of understanding each other, it creates this funny. And so my leaders over and over again go, well, she didn't fill out her curriculum. She didn't write down any answers. And I keep having to remind them, well, she thinks the discussion is as important as the discovery of the information, you know, for the millennial and going, hey, it's not that she doesn't care necessarily. She just thinks what everybody else thinks is just as important as what the teacher on the stage thinks, which as the teacher on the stage, I'd like them to think that what I have to say might be a little bit more important than whatever their friend on the corner thought about the lesson. And so that is that funny give and take there as well.
Yeah, people are less impressed with credentials.
Absolutely.
And, you know, hey, I have this DR or master's behind my name or whatever. And it's like,
if you have a blog, you have as much weight as the guy who has the PhD. And so the guy who has a PhD is going, well, that was a waste of 8 years. And when I could have just started a blog. And so it's an interesting.
and because there's this general, you know, relativistic, everybody can be true. They don't feel any sense of tension if they hold two things that are complete opposite and believing that they're both true. Like that doesn't bother them. And really kind of what it boils down to is they're really influenced by a crafty sounding argument.
Mm.
And so they're really swayed by somebody who sounds like they know what's going on, and specifically on their ability to sniff out when somebody is fake or is putting on a show. I mean, I think this generation is fantastic at going, mm-hmm. that's phony, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to believe that. But if somebody shows genuine passion, then they're like, oh, he may really have something to say, or she may really have something to say, and it may be true. And we saw this past semester at SMU. There was made a little bit of a news splash here, at least locally in Dallas, where a pro-life organization had come and put up a little memorial on a main part of campus at SMU. A young student walked by, was reading some of these crosses and what was on there, and saw that this pro-life message was maybe going to be offending some women who had made the choice to terminate a pregnancy. So he got the selfie camera on his phone, hit record, put it up there, and just recorded a video of himself, like right there in front of the campus. And it was the most passionate, well articulated. He sounded great and sounded like he knew exactly what he was talking about. It kind of went viral within the SMU community and Facebook, all these likes, all these shares. And then you watch it and you listen to the content of his arguments, and it was like, whoa, 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 this poor guy. His content's not there. These arguments aren't even logical. So we got some of our student leaders together a couple days after it came out, play the video. Okay, guys, what did you see with that? And they would just kind of sit there and go, well, think about this. And they just needed help interpreting his message. But they were all swayed by how passionate he was. Mm-hmm. And just how articulate he was. They were like, well, that must be true. And there was very little truth in it. Yeah. And so I just think they have some of these unorthodox views of truth that are really there. And I'll take this from Ben Stewart down at A&M. One of his observations specifically about college students is they're so smart, they're processing so much information all the time, which again is a positive that we'll talk about here in a second. But what that leads to is a lack of contemplation. And what's really interesting is even as narcissistic as they are, the self-focus is largely on their positives. Mm. And the self-focus does not seem to be on their negatives and their sin or their character flaws or where do they need to be maturing. And so there's very little self-contemplation on a deep, like maybe a healthy, what we would hope all maturing people would be doing, of just going, okay, I'm not as great as I think I am. I'm not as great as my mom told me I was. Mm-hmm. And so I do have some character flaws. I do have some parts of my character that are a little rough around the edges. And so, and what I find and how that plays out on campus is students just aren't thinking about God. Mm-hmm. Because again, they're in college. They're excited. Everything, the future's so bright. They're very optimistic. They're going to get 2 degrees. And so now they've got their bases covered and everything's great. It's like, God, why would I need that? I mean, I'm awesome. Right. And so those are just some other little things that I see.
Yeah, no, that's good. So I think if we were to end the webinar here, it's kind of like, well, you know, this generation's totally jacked up. You know, no hope. Let's just try to move on, you know. But obviously, just like you've said a couple times, Adam, you know, with every generation, there are weaknesses and there are also strengths.
Yeah.
And that pendulum swings both ways for as markers of a generation that could be really dangerous and unhealthy. You know, that pendulum also swings another way to say, man, dude, here's the good side of that.
Yeah.
So what are some of those positives that you see in the millennial generation?
Well, one of them, I'll just be really shallow if that's okay. I think they're hilarious.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like making fun of them, the man buns and the beards and all hipster vibe, all that. I mean, their humor is really sharp, really witty, and because they don't like the fake or they don't like pretend stuff, they're really not sarcastic. They're really smart satire. And so I think it's not like so I'm a Gen Xer, and so the comedians of my day were the Chris Rock, Andrew Dice Clay, Jerry Seinfeld to a certain extent, very sarcastic, loud, or with Seinfeld, you know, very observational, you know, no grapes, no nuts, what's the deal? You know, and we just think, oh, that's funny. Where they would look at that and go, that's just, grape nuts, whatever. I don't care what it's called. But they, you know, what they've done on the internet, even with memes and the GIFs, and I just think they are masters of pointing out the awkward, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys remember that story. I think it was about a year ago. Over in the UK, that research vessel that they were
naming it. Yeah,
I know there was like a 22-year-old behind that was hilarious. And so the name that they put out this poll, if anybody doesn't know the story, they were going to name this research vessel, And they said, let's let the people decide what we're going to name it. And they put a poll out there and people were voting on it. The number one vote was Bodie McBoatface. Just hilarious. I mean, I read that and I was like, that, God bless the internet, because it gives us little breaks in our day like that.
That was a really good example of like two generations totally clashing.
Yes. Oh yeah, the older folks were going, "This is not funny. We cannot name it Bodie McBoatface.
We'll name it after a war soldier or a hero or something like that."
And now they have Bodie McBoatface out on the water.
They were looking around going, "What would be incredibly awkward? I know Bodie McBoatface." And then all their other friends got on there, and they took it up to the top, and it's not named Bodie McBoatface, but that, you know, it should be.
Because someone from another generation was like, no.
Yeah, we can't do that. Yeah. That's not the authority structure that we have. Yeah, and so, I mean, the natural non-staged humor, I think, you know, viral videos, that's why they go viral largely, is because that stuff, it's the person that was walking into the grocery store and fell down. It was natural humor that they're like, that's hilarious. Let's make a GIF out of that.
Well, and even noticing too, some of those things I've said is that, especially online companies, marketing research, things like that, they're noticing, whereas the Gen X was the sort of anti-establishment generation, the rebellious generation, Gen Y, this millennial generation, is less like that. And so they're noticing things that tend to go viral are positive things. You know, a dad comes home from Iraq and meets his family, like things that make us feel good. And they say it used to be about 50-50, where you'd look at comments on the internet where, you know, be negative and positive, negative and positive. Now they're going, it's positive, 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 and then a negative comment thrown in there.
Yeah.
And that's that optimism of this generation, I think, is a trait that sometimes gets overlooked because people think they're blindly optimistic, but just going, hey, to hold on to hope in the midst of what they're seeing in their world is a really incredible thing for this generation to have.
Yeah. I mean, they, as you and I were even joking about a little bit earlier, I think the angst that Gen X is known for having, this generation should have.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing a Gen Xer experienced in their childhood was the whole new Coke phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
And that made us so angry that we were anti-establishment because Coke changed their formula for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. And so where they have seen real tragedy, and their optimism really is, it's inspiring. And so I think their humor, I think it does make the world a better place in a very shallow way. But it's fun, and I think that's one thing that I think I'm really grateful for millennials. I mean, that optimism, I mean, the bottom line is they want stuff to change in this world, and they have an ingredient that, at least I'll speak for myself as an Xer, that I don't have or that I struggle with. They believe they will change it.
Yeah.
Where I'll look at everything that's wrong and just go, nothing's going to change this. You know, just kind of throw my hands up. Cynicism is so easy for me and maybe some of my peers, where they believe they can change the world. I think they're gonna end up doing it. Well, they're large enough. They're the largest generation really since baby boomers. So there's enough of them. The world will change under their leadership. And I think they're a great reminder that positivity is way better and more motivational than even negativity.
So yeah, you mentioned that they are now officially the largest generation. I mean, they surpassed baby boomers, and I think as of January, it was something like 75 million compared to 74 million around in that area. And you think about some of the jokes we make about baby boomers, where I remember being told that my parents walked to school both ways uphill in the snow barefoot and things like that. And now you have this millennial generation is like, why would you do that? Let's just invent a hovercraft. You know, this sort of like, that stinks that you got to do that. I can't possibly relate to it.
You get viral videos.
Yeah,
people
that people fall.
Yeah,
exactly. So and so, that idea of why would you go through the hardship? Can't we change that?
Yeah.
Whereas you're right. The older generation is, hey, this is how it's been. This is how it will always be. I think that, and really what one of the positives I think of this generation, if I may just add in here, is just innovation. I mean, you look at the technology and the way that we're changing the world, and even the globalization of the world, where, you know, the plight in maybe a town in Africa used to not matter. Well, now with technology and globalization, suddenly you have an entire generation of American kids who care about that plight in Africa and are doing things about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge positive of this generation.
Yeah, I mean, what you see in the passion movement and the end it movement, I mean, that's not just red X's on their hands for social media. There's certainly people that are doing that. They're raising real money.
Yeah.
And doing a lot of good to try to end slavery in this generation, which, again, as an Xer, I'm like, end slavery? That's been around since forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going, no, we're going to do it. And I love that optimism.
Yeah, I was just going to say, being in a world, and this generation is really the one who grew up with the iPhone, the internet, the, you know, all the things that back in our childhood, it was like,
the speak and spell.
Yeah, totally. You know, and that's
no.
So with the world getting as small as it is now, and the fact that you really can, I mean, you can interact with people on the other side of the world. Like some people do it all day, every day.
Yeah.
That it really is like a global community that a lot of this, what used to be global talk for Gen Xers, that seemed this insurmountable thing is now global talk. Like, hey, we're going to end global, slavery within this generation is more like, oh, well, yeah, because that's what I do in my backyard.
Yeah.
That there's that mentality now that the world is a small place. Like things are achievable. You can see the end if only let's put these things into place and move toward it. So
yeah.
There are, and this is a point I wanted to make a little bit earlier. Like there are, I feel like there are systems in place now that are unique to this generation that were either developing or just didn't exist in previous generations that really shape and mold the way people interact with one another. That really affects, some of the intangibles that we're talking about. Now they're able to play themselves out in certain ways that prior to 20, 30 years ago just weren't even possible.
Yeah.
So
some more positives. I mean, this generation seems to like their parents more than other previous generations. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, a lot of them come from broken homes. But I think that I think that bodes well just for the institution of the family, is that they're having a different family experience. It's not like, again, for me, I'm going to go to college, I'm going to go away. My parents, I can't wait to be out from under their authority, where I'm noticing, I'm really surprised at how many college students still reach out to their parents, and their parents are their number one voice in their life. And so one of the guys that I have discipled over at SMU, I'm still surprised. And it's just not surprised that because his parents, anything wrong with his parents. Just I'm surprised because it's so different than
yeah.
Mm-hmm. on how much.
Yeah, they're saying this is the first generation that's really just not rebelling in their teen years,
yes.
Whereas, and I'm kind of a little bit, find myself a little bit more Xer in the cynicism. I don't share the same optimism my generation at times, but I remember thinking if my parents thought it was probably a dumb idea. I remember going through that. And now with the younger women that I'm around, of same idea, Adam, where let me call my mom and ask her what she thinks. Let me call my dad and ask him what he thinks. And I'm sitting here going, that's so foreign to me. Like it took me a while to realize how valuable my parents were and how they're, and same thing even in voting trends, where people were really influenced by politicians and by people out in the civic arena by who they were going to vote for. And now more and more we're seeing, hey, if my mom's a Republican, then I'm probably a Republican in this generation, which is such a unique thing. But for that family core unit that did suffer so much brokenness, as you referenced, to now have a return where a generation says, no, we respect our parents and we love and we care for them. That's a refreshing return.
We value family.
Absolutely.
Which I think is great. And it had a conversation this past week at that camp with the UT students where the girl lives, and she is now away from her family. And she just was sitting there just going, hey, I miss them. I miss having that influence in my life. How do you think I can go about getting some more adults? I mean, I got plenty of 20-year-olds around me, but I miss that more parental guidance. And so, and I see that at SMU, if we can get students more attracted to be in a mentoring relationship with an adult, then we can get them to be in a peer small group.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, do you want to be in a small group? Maybe if I got time, if there's nothing else going on. Hey, do you want to be mentored? Absolutely. I want to be mentored. Give me the guy's name.
Yeah.
And I want that person, like my parents, kind of pouring into me. So the more educated, I mean, I think that is, they know their stuff. And it really, and so one of the guys, one of the students at SMU, Ronnie, is one of the most, maybe outside of present company, one of the smartest people I have ever met.
Why, thank you.
And I mean, it got to the point where I'd spend time with him. Like he had studied so much theology and apologetics that I wouldn't even Google. I would just ask Ronnie, because Ronnie just knows so much. And I think he's maybe a little abnormal in just his retention and photographic memory. But I think by and large, they have thought about some really weighty they've processed a lot of information. So mm-hmm. I think that education is helping the innovation.
Absolutely.
And the creativity to think about different things. And the diversity is really, I think, especially in light of where the conversation around race has been mm-hmm. in the country over the last couple of months or a few weeks, they just draw their tribe lines differently.
Mm.
And I'm seeing that a lot. And I'm seeing it even now as I'm meeting different college students from different schools, even here in Dallas. And there's this one friend group. They all came from one high school. And it almost is fake how diverse that friend group is. in the sense of you're like, that looks a little staged, like a college brochure staged, right? Right? Yeah. Like it looks fake, yeah. But they really, it's a little bit of everything. And they have drawn their lines around, honestly, for this group, around the gospel, which is the way it should be. Yeah, right. And great. So the diversity, they are so comfortable with different cultures, again, leading to that humor and the self-deprecation. They make fun of their own cultures, yeah, around each other, you know, and they'll, and
often we're fearful really of what we don't know. You know, that's so true of human nature. And so you think about a generation that had no exposure to a different culture or wasn't around those who aren't like themselves. Well, with this generation being so connected through Twitter or social media or YouTube or whatever, suddenly foreign cultures become less scary because you're, mm-hmm, going, I know your music. Yeah, I know your norms. Right. I know your, you know, and I'm in this with you. And I identify more with you as my millennial brother than I do as, you know, maybe skin color or other cultural norms like that, which is a hugely positive thing in, yeah, that generation.
So I think they've got a lot to teach.
Absolutely.
Us on the diversity. And they really do see the lines, or they see differences very differently than maybe some of the other generations do, yeah, where they're not just looking at outside stuff. It's more like, oh, you like country music, mm-hmm, and I don't. Like that.
Oh,
that's,
you're
a
Android
line.
And Apple.
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
Yeah,
they're,
yeah,
they're just drawing those lines different, where, you know, for my generation and in my high school, largely the groups were drawn by skin color. That, right, that's where it was, where now that is, I'm seeing less of that. Yeah. Is there a problem with it? Absolutely. There's still a problem. We're not, yeah, where we want to be, yeah, with all of that. But I see in this generation a lot of hope, and it's really encouraging. I think we can learn a lot from them.
That's cool. Yeah. So I think as people who are probably listening today, we probably have people who have a millennial child,
yep,
that they interact with. We probably have other millennials that are listening in that, you know, they are millennial. So as we think about one, communicating effectively, so I'm kind of talking more on the parent side or the Gen Xer or baby boomer who's interacting with a millennial and is scratching their head going, what in the world? How do we get on the same page here? What do we say to them? And then also, what do we say to millennials to say, hey, this is how you should be introspective and self-examining, and this is how you need to be sensitive to other generations as well? I mean, yeah, I think about what you just said, where the person is like, oh, I'm just not that concerned with race. Well, you sit there and talk to a baby boomer, right, or an African-American baby boomer, who's like, what do you mean you're not that concerned about,
yeah,
race? Like,
I'd be very offended.
Yeah,
by that.
I grew, yeah, up in Jim Crow. Yeah. Like, that's offensive that you don't share the same passion. So, yeah, I mean, I just use that as an example to talk about, like, hey, what are some of those principles that should inform how we attempt to either reach a millennial or for a millennial to self-examine?
Yeah, and I don't think there's a silver bullet that's going to be anything different because the millennials are so unique, and here's the words we need to use. I think it's just stuff that we would do in any whenever we're facing differences with anybody. And that's just realize that the differences are different. Mm-hmm. They're not better or worse. And so I think that first, that recognition personally for us. So if I'm a parent of a millennial or I'm a boss of a millennial, it's just going, hey, they're different. It's not that I'm better, my generation's better, and they're worse. So I think some of that's just going to help our approach, because if we think one's better than the other, then we're not building a bridge, we're building a case, mm-hmm, and they're going to sense that, because, mm-hmm, again, they can sense, mm-hmm, if you genuinely care or not. One of the things that also we need to know, though, or remember, is part of our role as being older ones in their life, part of our role is to shepherd them and to, mm-hmm, help them with that. Mm-hmm. And so even though I have to remind myself that even though the students, because of going back to information and how smart they are, what an unintended negative consequence of how much information they processed is what, and it's a title of a book, one guy who studies this generation, what happens is it's an artificial maturity. Mm-hmm. So you can have a conversation with somebody on a very intellectual topic, and they will blow you away.
They have information.
Yes, they've, yep, got so much information.
Yep.
And you may, in like a job interview, be like, oh my gosh, she's gone here, she's done that, she's got a heart for this, she's trying to end this. That's amazing. She is like the most mature 22-year-old I've ever met. And then they start working for you, and you realize that she doesn't know how to resolve conflict. She talks behind your back. She doesn't respect authority. She's got this relational. So what she has intellectually, that maturity, the relational maturity is just not there for a lot of reasons maybe. And so, just knowing, you just got to figure out aware that they do need some shepherding in that, and just speak into that and make sure that you know they know that you care about all of that. And so those are something I think for bosses and parents to remember is just it's different, and they do need us.
Yeah.
You know, just like we needed the boomers,
yeah.
and we needed
yeah.
The generations ahead of us. There was a lot we could learn from them, and so we can't just back down because we still have to speak
absolutely.
Up into this.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that you know, Adam and Nate, probably from your generation, is so much thinking in terms of like if you're a church leader trying to reach a millennial generation, and Barna put out a research, and the number one thing they said that if you want to reach millennials in your church is to make room for meaningful relationships. And that's how you gain maturity, right? Is you hang out with people who are more mature. And so their generation tends to hang out with themselves, but they desire opportunities, like we were saying earlier, to hang out with somebody older than them. And so if we can create room for that, where so much of sometimes what we do within the church or in relationships is going, hey, I have information that would be helpful to you. Well, they're looking at us going, I can read a book.
Yeah.
I can read a blog. I don't need the information. I need to be able to talk about myself. I need to be able to express some ideas or to tell you some hurts or some pains. And so I think as you're reaching millennials, if you remember, hey, inviting them into your house to have dinner is probably more valuable than opening up a Bible at Starbucks and trying to exegete Mark 5, you know,
absolutely.
And I think that's a big part of it is they may seem like they have it all together, but they don't. I mean,
yeah.
they just don't like. And what 22-year-old does?
None of us did.
You know,
I certainly didn't.
Yeah. And
maybe some different emotional experiences that they didn't have. But yeah, I mean, a perfect example of that is one of these students that I was able to disciple down at SMU. I mean, it was a good year to maybe 15 months of a lot of time with him
mm-hmm.
before my phone rang
yeah.
from him. Going, I got a problem.
Yeah,
mm.
right.
And I thought as a pastor, I had the right to get into that stuff right away.
Yeah.
And so that was me just going, well, because when I was his age, a pastor started hanging out with me and I was like, I spilled everything. Let me give you all the
yeah,
details.
Yeah,
let's talk
pastor.
About this right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
You're the authority. All right. Where this desire for the relationship once, and I don't know if it was, there was a point in his mind where he was like, I think Adam really does care. And so now I'm going to call him. And what was great is the thing to call about was a relational conflict with somebody in his family.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm able to help provide some shepherding and emotional maturity and relational maturity for this guy. It took a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
You know, that was a lot of conversations over Chick-fil-A about a lot of different things mm. in that guy's life to be able to earn that right
yeah.
to be able to speak
yeah.
into.
Yeah, and there's probably quite a few parents who are maybe listening right now that are fit in that category of scratching their head looking at their kid. There's something about a parent looking at a kid that's like, hey, I don't want you to fail. I don't want you to – and maybe some of it is just kind of projecting – your own expectations on them to say, I don't want you to fail because I don't want to feel like I failed.
Yeah.
You know, that's really complex, but there is a part of that where people in their own generation mindset attempt to grab a hold and control a situation where the person that and they probably do it out of really good intention. Like, I really do want to help you, but really it's further deepening a divide because that person on the other side is like, hey, There's relational mending that needs to take place here. There's trust that needs to be reestablished before I even listen to you, you
yeah.
know? And so I think there is like, you know, the fact that it took 18 months or so before this kid calls you, I think is informative. You know, I can tell a bunch of stories and, you know, in my life as well about that same thing where viewing that as, hey, I'm here. I'm present. Like I'm faithfully present in your life and I'm allowing you to fail. Because I think one of the biggest responsibilities we have for this type of generation is when a millennial does fail, and they will, everybody does, but whether it's in small ways or in big ways, is that we're faithfully present so that they do look at us
yes.
and go, hey, what do I do?
Yes.
You know, my heart's broken. I lost my job. My dreams are crushed,
yes.
you know, and instead of coping in really unhealthy ways, there's a faithful presence in their life. To go, hey, I've always been here, and
yeah.
now I'm able to, whether it's a pastor or a friend or a parent or whoever, now I'm able to very effectively like minister the gospel of Christ.
Yeah.
I know for me, as I've talked to millennials who have been at an impasse or they've hit a wall or that's largely what I do is just to love on them, and then also to gently redirect, to ask questions. Hey, have you ever thought about this? And so you're just kind of redirecting their issues toward a solution that's rooted in the gospel.
Yeah. That fear of failure is, I mean, it's a universal human experience that I think is very accentuated and magnified in this generation mm-hmm. right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, look, this is the generation that started specializing in sports mm-hmm. at a much younger age. Yep. And so they never experienced being mediocre on a soccer team, because if they were mediocre on a soccer team, they went and played baseball. And if they were mediocre there, then they
swimming,
went to football.
Whatever,
and
yeah.
So, finding their niche.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's very niche. Just find what you're amazing at and just do that. And so even just helping them see that it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Well, and everything's so public too. I mean, it's interesting. Like, you know, you date somebody for 6 months and then when the relationship ends, well, we all know because it changed statuses on Facebook. And so, you know, and like in a lot of ways, like you fail publicly now. And so it was one thing to go home, hang your head and have your mom throw her arms around you and go, it's okay. It's another thing for me to be like, well, everybody knew about the game because I was bragging how I qualified for regionals and now how did it go? Don't ask
me. There's
so.
A lot of Gen Xers that are really grateful that they did not grow up. And
absolutely.
Go through high school in the Facebook, Twitter age. Like,
yes.
Can you imagine?
Yes. that would have been bad. I think as a boss, like somebody, if you're leading a responsible ministry or in workplace to lead millennials, I think one of the most helpful things I've heard from Tim Elmore, he's the guy that came up with that idea of that book, Artificial Maturity. So one of the things that I learned has been really helpful for me. This is an upload culture, not a download culture, mm-hmm. or an upload generation. Mm-hmm. They prefer to upload, not download. Mm-hmm. And so what that means is they want to get their hands dirty. Mm-hmm. They don't really want to talk theory for a long period of time. They want to create something and upload it and let everybody see it. And upload doesn't have to be literally to the internet. Oh, oftentimes it is. Mm-hmm. To their shame years later. But so I just think giving them space to dream and try something. Mm-hmm. So, you don't agree with the way I'm doing this? Great. Here's what I would love for you to do. You got your phone right there. Go to the internet. Try to find some other solutions. You present to me. Mm-hmm. And not doing this in a snarky way, but you come up with a solution. Yeah. Come up with a project here. Figure out a way that we could do this and do it better. And let's see.
Yeah.
Let's see how that works. And I think they just seem to light up when they have something to work on and do that may be contributing.
Yeah, I think the same is true in the church as well. You think about, you know, if all my leaders and women's Bible studies are always above the age of 50, then the 20-somethings inevitably going, am I ever going to get my chance? Yeah. I mean, when am I mature enough to, because I've been told my whole life I have spiritual gifts. I've been trying to use them. Is there a safe place for me to come and try and fail? You know, and I think that's part of even how we reach millennials is giving an opportunity to do something impactful. Shout out to Blake Holmes, who created the residency program here at Watermark, who many of us in this room have been, Nate, myself, and Sylvia are all beneficiaries of, where we came into an internship program, but instead of being asked to make copies all day long, we were given real responsibility, which, for us young millennials, that excites us, because I'm like, I want to use what I think I've got, and I could be wrong, and I might fall on my face, and I did plenty.
Yeah.
But to have the chance to really make an impact is a huge way for millennials to buy in, not only to the church, but to the business and where they're at.
And what we may do is, because we see a lack of maturity, we can see some of those flaws because we're older and more experienced, just have some perspective. We'd be reluctant to give them something.
Absolutely.
Because we're like, well, we need to equip them a little more.
Or we forget that someone took a chance on us when they saw ours.
Is it efficient? No. Is it effective? Yes. Let them try something.
Cool.
Let them fail a little bit.
Yeah, so some of the practical questions that have just come up, and just thinking about some of the thoughts that you guys talked about mentoring folks and people wanting to be mentoring, are there avenues that could be spoken about now in the church? Like, hey, if you want to be equipped by an older woman, more mature, head to women's Bible study. Or if you're that person that has, hey, I'm older, more mature, I'd love to help shepherd. What are some of those avenues that we have available for folks saying, okay, I want to help?
Yeah, absolutely. So just speaking on the women's half, one of the huge values that we have in our women's Bible study is multi-generational groups, so that we can create opportunities for organic relationships to form. Church models that create mentoring programs tend to fail because they're inorganic.
Yep.
It's a little like speed dating. You get paired with somebody and it turns out you don't even really like each other. And so there's not, you know, and for a millennial, like Adam was saying, it takes a long time to even develop that relationship where I can fully trust you. And so in women's Bible study, if you're looking for an older woman, or you are an older woman, come join us this fall, starting in September, because we create groups that have 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s and on up, so that we are at least trying to facilitate an atmosphere where you can rub shoulders with somebody older and wiser than you, and hopefully that develops into something.
Yeah, I would say on the guy's side, the men's expression of women's Bible study is obviously men's Bible study.
No, you have a cooler name.
Summit Men's Bible Study. And And yeah, again, I think addressing this question has tiers to it. So the first tier would be, hey, you have to put yourself out there in some way. You have to come to, you know, a Bible study where you can meet other people. And so there's a relational risk for someone who's not plugged in at all to come and, you know, raise their hand and, hey, I'd love to do that. But over the last year or so, we've started a new initiative through Men's Bible Study to try to pair people up who are raising their hand with this exact thing to say, hey, I'd love to spend time with an older guy. And we identify those people through a process, and then we'll just kind of put them together. And there's, for some groups, it sticks. And for other groups, it's kind of like what Nika said, where it's like, you know, hey, this is just not working for me. And we're cool with that. It's an organic process. And so people move in and out of that. And then I would say too, like, I know for me growing up, like when I got around a guy that I respected and would just, instead of waiting on, you know, oh, that guy like mentors me or whatever, like I pursued the guy, you know, I mean, I made to the point where I was going to make him tell me no, you know,
send him flowers. And,
no, it wasn't quite like that.
Okay. Just checking.
But like in school, I made sure I took his class with other mentor type guys and me. I bought dinners. I bought whatever, like, hey, can I please spend time around you? So there's a lot of self-initiative thing that can go on there as well. But to answer the question, we do have expressions in both the women's and men's Bible study to plug people into that type of relationship here.
So. And in college ministry, we just do, I mean, it's like the oldest, most uncreative, it's adopt a student program. And it's so easy. It's such a low commitment. And then we just say, hey, a couple times a semester, try to have somebody come over. And I am constantly, I sometimes forget we have the program until I meet a student. They're like, they tell me how great it is. And so we of course have a couple that were some students and the families that don't connect really well, but it's just such an easy way to try to get students to start building relationships with some other families.
That's great. I think that's also a good point that, hey, around here, we also have to serve. And so I think that even if you're just bumping around people, like you said, Nathan, it's like, hey, if you serve on front lines, you're going to be around people that are older and wiser than you. And the same of, you know, I like to shout out MoneyWise too. You're coming for a very practical need, but you're going to be bumping around people that are very much more mature and wise than you. And so I love that there is that serve ask, because you just come around, and if you initiate, you're going to find someone. Yep. So.
Yep. So Adam, let's say we probably do have some millennials that are listening. They're the largest generation in America. So in addition to talking to Sylvia and I right now, what would you just, as we wrap up and close to wrapping this up, what would you say to a millennial who's listening to go, hey, what's the thing that we would love to hear from Adam, who spends all his time with millennials? What's the thing that we need to hear to help us do better and what it is that we're doing?
Yeah. And I, you know, as I put some time thinking about this, I think the advice I would give if they asked would be really simple. It may not sound really glamorous, and it's like resolve to become a really good follower. Mm. And so what that looks like is when you're, you know, if you're at a big church, like a Watermark, or at your church, jump in, serve somewhere, be a follower, meaning don't expect a promotion in 2 weeks. Don't expect to be the leader of it. Just be a follower. A lot of them that are out there in the workplace right now, that's going to be the one area where they spend most of their time, where they really need to focus on being a good follower, being a good employee. And here's why, because I think Romans 13 is really, really, really clear that God works in and through authority in our life. And I think most generations would agree that one of the common things we all have in common is that when we were in those late teens, early 20s, moving into our 30s, the authority in our life did, like, God used authority more than just about any other thing in our life to really shape us and mold us and help us to become effective leaders in our, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, hopefully, and beyond. And so I think there is, if there was like a message, a drum that I'm going to beat for that millennial generation, if there was one thing where I could just speak like as an authority shepherd, yeah, somebody who loves them and going, do this, just focus on being a good follower. Because here's the thing, what you'll realize one day, if you get to be a leader, you get to have authority over others or get to be a boss in your organization, what you're going to realize is that the people who are bosses in your organization right now, or leaders in your organization right now, the reason they're there is because they earned it, and they like they really know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not up there just by, and I'm sure somebody's like, no, I work for the guy who's the son of the president or whatever. And so, okay, maybe that's different or I, not, but most people.
But even in that, you know, I think I found myself, you know, growing up in athletics, for example, there were times when I just flat out disagree with what my coach was telling us. I just didn't think it was a good strategy. And I really did think I had the right answer. And, and there were times in my foolish millennial ways that I let that be known and I ran until I barfed. And then there were times when I thought, you know, I'm not the coach. At the end of the day, I'm not the coach. And it'll go well with me to follow in line and earn the respect of my coaches to be able to have the right to speak into those moments and to be able to, and so I think you're right. You know, even in those moments when you're dealing with nepotism and you're working for the doofus, to go, gosh, there's still this authority that God has ordained in my life for this season that hopefully won't be a long season. But it is so sharpening and so refining in our lives.
Yeah, I mean, seasons of my life working under bad leaders is where I saw God work the most sometimes. And I just think there is something, number one, then you appreciate it when you work for good leaders. You learn a lot personally about, all right, well, I'm going to make sure I don't lead that way.
Yeah.
But I think it really boils down to the one thing that all men struggle with, and that's who's the God of this life? Am I the God? Am I the one who leads my life, or am I really submitting my life to the Lord? And so I you know, if I had to just pick one thing that I was going to really try to encourage millennials with, I would just say that, like, be a good follower right now.
Yeah. And I think ultimately to tie this together, shocker, right? But to tie it together and say, like, hey, learning to be a good follower of Jesus. You know, I've been walking with Jesus for a while, and I have found that in times in the difficulties in following Jesus, like, those are the times where I get refined, that those are the times where, when I hit a wall, instead of, you know, running into comfort or something that's familiar, or like the Lord teaching me, like, hey, Nathan, I'm going to put this weight on you. And instead of running away from it or trying to lift it or whatever, I want you to sit. I want you to sit, and I want you to listen. And I want you to submit, really.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that submitting to authority can feel really abnormal or unnatural. It feels unnatural to all of us to some degree, but especially for this generation. And to teach, and yet there's something about being yoked to, or tied to, or under the authority of Christ that's liberating. It's freeing. It's the weight that is light. And that's, I think, that the trick as we, you know, talk to millennials and casting a vision of the beauty of Christ, and knowing that, hey, when you tie yourself in discipleship and followership to Him, then you're going to find the life that you've always looked for.
That's great.
Yeah. So there's a few resources that we put. I think it's called IY.
Yeah, Generation IY by
Generation
Tim Elmore.
Generation IY by Tim Elmore. Yeah. Adam highly recommends that. And then Nike's, it's funny, we were talking about this. I was asking you, hey, what books?
Yeah. I was like, millennials
this generation,
don't read books.
Yeah, millennials don't read books. There are articles.
They're written by boomers. So I love art. And I, you know, the more I've talked about millennialism and things like that, I think more people go, hey, where are you getting these stats? And so I include just a couple of links to where just cold hard facts that we've gathered about millennials, where we've come to these conclusions about them. So there's one of those links. And then if you're a church leader or somebody who volunteers in the church and you're wondering, hey, I want more millennials filling the pews, there's a great article by Barna. And Barna is a research organization that's Christian bent, Christian organization. And they've just got some great principles for you can look and go, hey, is my ministry creating space for this so that the largest generation, mind you, would feel comfortable here? And obviously we don't want to bend to every generation's whims, but I think there's some great principles that are based out of truth and out of scripture that you can be evaluating your ministry and going, hey, are we doing enough to make this type of person feel welcome? And where can we excel still?
Yeah, totally. I mean, communication is always, it's both what you say and also what's heard. But in a lot of cases, it's more what's heard.
Absolutely.
And so understanding your audience, you're responsible both for the message of the gospel, but as you see it, but also to do the best you can to adjust to, man, I want to make sure that what I'm saying is actually being heard.
Yeah. And then I would just say, you know, most of the stuff you read about millennials is funny. You go to Google them and it's like, millennials are the worst. Why are they so bad? How do we, you know, and I would just tell you, as a millennial who works with millennials, who's proud to be a millennial, especially if you go to Watermark, it's easy to look at the generation below you and go, they're the worst. And so millennials will have our day. Don't worry, it's coming. But we really do love you, and we really do believe you'll change the world. And I think that's what's crazy, is it's easy to have our gripes about you because you drive us nuts. I drive myself nuts in my millennial tendencies.
You drive me nuts too.
Yeah, no, I do. But you know, it's crazy to me as you look at JP Jonathan Pacluda, who would be remiss if we didn't mention in this conversation, and how he looks at the young adults of Dallas, the millennials of Dallas, and he tells them, we're going to change the world through Dallas, and they go, yes, we are. And I think there's something really powerful and Christ honoring in that. And so, if anything we said today made you go, gosh, more of that, just hear us say it's a truth that there's some problems with this generation. But we hope that we'll also go, hey, we really do believe you're gonna lead us into the next forefront of Christianity, and we believe you can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Adam, thanks for your time today, man.
Love it.
Thanks for your ministry.
Yeah.
Thanks for your friendship and just the way you lead millennials. And definitely want to.
Thankful for the way that the Final Four football turned out last year, just for the record. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. You guys are ranked what, 2, I think, in the preseason
pool.
Yeah.
We're 3.
Yeah. Anyway,
we'll meet again.
Yeah, we will. I'll see you in January.
But definitely just want to highlight again the men's and women's Bible studies. Obviously, the college ministry that's now kind of, existing side by side with the young adult ministry in the porch. If you're in the DFW area, you are a millennial, man, come check those things out on Tuesday nights. And then men's and women's Bible studies on Thursday nights. And then next month, we're excited. It's going to be September the 23rd, I believe, that Friday. During lunch, Dr. Daryl Bach, who's the New Testament professor down at Dallas Theological Seminary. He's also the director of the Center for Christian Leadership at DTS and Cultural Engagement. And we're going to talk to him about, hey, in a crazy world of a lot of different things flying around, how do we effectively engage our culture as light in the darkness? So we hope you guys have a great weekend. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to join us. And we hope to see you next time.